people-first organizations will win in the future of work.
Your only real asset is your people.
We all want purpose-driven work.
HR-led organization is...
I'm sorry, but leaders don't lead empty desks and empty shop floors.
Welcome to the People Strategy Leaders Show. I'm your host, Sri Chalapa, founder and president of Engagedly, and a serial entrepreneur in technology, films, and music. This is where we talk to people leaders, business strategists, and organizational savants about leading in the time of change. What is working, what is not working, and more importantly, what we should be thinking about. Stick around to the end of the show. We will reveal how you can be our next guest. And now, let's engage.
Hello, and this is Sri Chalapa with People Strategy Leaders Podcast. Today, I have Penny DeVilliers. Penny is the founder of Rebalanced Life, a consultancy dedicated to building change-fit cultures, ones that thrive in today's volatile, high-pressure environment without sacrificing human energy in the process. What sets Penny apart is not just her expertise, but the fact she's lived it. A high-achieving executive, she pushed through exhaustion until her body gave out, leading to a six-month crash that profoundly changed her life and career. With deep expertise in organizational change and employee experience, Penny works with fast-moving companies, including global brands like Uber Freight, to reimagine how they scale, lead, and protect their people. Her approach blends compassionate leadership with sharp business strategy, helping companies prevent burnout, not with wellness perks, but by transforming how work is structured. Well, thank you, Penny, for being on the show. I really appreciate your time here.
Thank you, Sri. Good to be here.
So we were talking about, you know, burnout, but and you wrote this book that you just came out with called From Leadership to Strategic Pioneering. Let's talk about what that actually means and then what prompted you to write that book.
Okay, well, I think I'll start with what. Thanks for having me. Yeah, firstly, thanks to everybody who's joining us. I think what prompted me was my own burnout story, as you mentioned. I thought I was superwoman. I was literally working the hustle culture and achieving, and thought, you know, this, I'd arrived, and one morning I could literally not stand up, found myself crawling on hands and knees across the kitchen floor. And that was obviously a big turning point, as burnout is for many people, because you go from somebody's completely able to somebody who's basically feels like they have a disability, they're unable to function. And that's quite a shocking experience for anyone. And they say often happens to A-type personalities. So for those kind of people, it's even more shocking to lose your control. And that was a wake-up call for me, as it is for many people, to change my own life. But firstly, I felt guilty about it. And I think I thought I didn't, you know, I'm just not making this hype. I'm not as high-powered and fantastic as I think I am. But yeah. Then I realized, and this is now moving towards your second question about the book, when I went back to my own business and how I manage teams, I realized that actually it's not me. It's, of course, we can all establish boundaries, but yeah, the environments that we are creating for people to work in are causing massive burnout. So what inspired the book was this experience in my life.
So leadership is fundamentally shifting, because the burnout is at all levels, right? Because burnout is not just for the employees. We don't talk about so much about burnout at the leadership level, at the CEO level, at the CXO level, at the VP level, the director level, or running your own business level. So what, in your view, needs to change in the leadership behaviors and approach so that we can minimize it? I don't think we can eliminate burnout necessarily, but at least minimize it, or at least address those issues.
Well, I think we've got to look at, you know, why people are exhausted and why they don't enjoy coming to work, why mm-hmm. they're becoming cynical. These are all the results of when people use this word burnout. You know, people are not productive. They're exhausted. They're cynical. You'll often find that people bringing the culture down in the company. So these are the things that we've got to look at. If we're working people to the bone, literally, you know, they say you can't die, you know, no one died from hard work. Well, actually, people are getting very sick from the way that we're working and the pace that we're working at and the old systems that were in place. And you're right, burnout is predominantly hitting young people from early 20s to their 30s, because research is showing that people from the older generation, from the hustle culture, they actually go home and say, I've got to tough this out. This isn't a work thing. It's a me thing. I've just got to work harder. I've just got to grind more. And then, of course, it hits you because the pace of work is not sustainable, but it's not just pace. And I think that's the question you're asking. And that's one of the things that I really address the 18 shifts in my book, because it's things like psychological safety. Do people feel safe at work? Do they feel part of a bigger vision? Are their voices heard? Do you know, we know our customers so well, but do we know our people?
Yeah, one of the things I was reading about, I think it was Jeff Bezos or somebody else was talking about it, or maybe it was Sam Altman. Like, a lot of the reasons you have fatigue and burnout is because you work so hard and you realize you're not making any progress. And that can drive a lot of burnout too, right? And because of the competitive situation we are in, you just have to work hard just to stay in place in many ways, right?
You're right. And you're right about that, because, of course, this burnout is considered by the World Health Organization a syndrome of work of misalignment in the workplace.
Yes.
You're 100% right. I mean, why would you? And I think what's interesting is young people are sort of waking us all up by going, yeah, why do you guys do that? Why has my father spent his whole life going to work and being miserable? Why did you even do it? We're not prepared to do it. And so they're sort of shining a light on this. And also we have science, which is a wonderful thing. We have neuroscience to look at cortisol levels, to look at what makes people happy and what doesn't make them happy. So workplace management is becoming a lot more scientific than it was.
Yeah. So one of the things that you talk about is that burnout is not a failure of individual resilience. It's a system malfunction. Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that?
So, I mean, for example, rest has always been seen as a reward. So if you work really hard, you can take some time off or you can take a break. But systematically, we're finding the research on what they called, I've got it written down, so I don't, you know, Altradian cycles. And these cycles are showing that people really perform the best at a 90-minute cycle. So if that's true, then after 90 minutes, people should be encouraged to take a break. Go and take a walk outside, not just to the coffee machine, but take a real systems break. And then they suggest collaborating again in a project which requires people to think together, using their energy on a different level. We're also seeing that people moving from task to task, it can take some people up to 30 minutes to really refocus on the next task. But before they can do that, they've been given another task to do. So a lot of companies like Microsoft, Cisco, have built in deep work sessions. So people don't move from task to task, and you're actually not being effective. And this is what I mean by redesigning things. It's an exciting era where leaders can say, clearly the system's broken. Otherwise, Deloitte's latest figures globally of over 70% of people in the last year, well, Asana's, that was Asana study, over 70% of people in the last year have experienced burnout in their global study. That's a very big number.
That's huge. That is dramatic. Yeah, that is
And
dramatic.
that has to be a red light going, we can't continue the same way. And I think McKinsey's article now in 2025, where they said well-being is now a non-negotiable pillar of strategic importance for companies, and that companies that really do look at well-being and craft it into their strategy are going to build brand reputations. And we're seeing that already. Where do you want to work? At companies that bring you joy, at places where you can be the best version of yourself.
So what message? So let's talk about, yes, we agree and acknowledge this burnout is an issue, and well-being is important, and the way we structure work is also needs to be maybe rethought. And better ways of doing it using this 90-minute or other types of methods. And I've heard of the Pomodoro technique, which is another way of doing this similar
Yes.
things. What do you say to the CEOs who are like, I it's a to me, it sounds like a privilege because I am in a highly competitive world. So if, let's say you're working for OpenAI or another AI company, you can't say, I'm going to give a lot of well-being breaks to my employees for the next, few months because things are moving so fast that if you're not working fast enough, you'll fall behind. So many industries are in that situation, obviously. I'm not talking about AI as an extreme example, but that's probably true for, if you are running a retail s stores in compete trying to compete against Amazon and Walmart of the world. What's the solution for that CEO and their organization?
But like all CEOs, I think they like the facts, and the facts are that burnout's expensive. Deloitte estimates it costs companies about $322 billion globally in turnover and lost productivity. So, but I mean, beyond cost, I think it's a brand issue. Teams feel depleted
Yeah.
and they don't deliver excellence. And we spoke earlier about customers. Customers feel that when people are tired and irritable on the phone, and when people are short, investors feel it. So if you want loyalty and innovation and long-term brand equity, you need a workforce that's energized, that's got clarity, that feels psychologically safe to speak up, to come up with innovation. I think well-being isn't a perk. It's actually a performance infrastructure.
So how do you measure some of these things, if you will, to make sure that I am, as a CEO, making progress towards this?
I think one of the oldest measurements is retention. How often do people resign, quietly quit, when you evaluate why they do leave, and they tell you why they do leave. So unpleasant places to work have a high staff turnover. Nobody wants to work there. They don't enjoy their job. So that's quite a quick, easy one to measure. And most companies have been doing that for a long time. Now we've started to introduce energy pulse scores and to track teams' recovery cycles. So when do they have the most energies in the day, and when do they find that they're very low in energy? And to put high priority perk work around high energy cycles and change the way that meetings are structured so that people perform at higher levels and also enjoy their work. And then things like psychological safety audits, that you can have a look at disengagement. And you can do these audits in your teams. You can have a look at why people, when a lot of people say, oh, our staff are not engaged, they don't speak up, they've never got anything to say. Well, there's your
Answer.
answer.
Yeah. So how do you do a psychological audit in an organization or a team?
Well, it's done via surveys, and it's also, there's certain things that you could spot in Teams itself. Like I said to you, where people don't want to speak up. Let's just say you've got a problem, and somebody feels that they know what the solution to the problem is, But the last time they spoke up, they were shot down. And or they were ridiculed, or the manager said, listen, we've only got 5 minutes to be on the call, which is the old sort of controlling, I'm going to tell you what to do. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to fix the problem. Okay, go and get it done. Come back when it's done. So people don't feel in companies, there's a reason why you mentioned this earlier. I don't feel part of a team. I don't feel like I can speak up and say to my boss, because if I do, I could get fired. Because I'm actually telling him that what he just instituted isn't working. What manager wants to hear that? Not too many. But those who do say to teams, I want to hear about the mistakes we've made this week. I want to find new solutions to problems. Those teams are the ones that are really performing well, and people feel free to also admit when they've made mistakes and not try and cover them up. That's psychological safety.
Yeah. So in your book, you have a few, like 18 strategic shifts that are part of this transformation to improve wellness and overall leadership, that to reduce burnout. Can you talk a little bit more about some of those other strategic shifts that you want to emphasize that we should have a takeaway, we should take away as leaders?
Well, there's quite a lot of them. I focus a lot on techno stress and managing energy. I focus also on psychological safety. I focus on culture and the kind of the things, the kind of conversations that we have around performance and rewarding performance. So what you're finding in really forward-thinking companies, that they are building values into their performance strategy. Values like rest and continuous renewal. So if, let's just, I know you go, okay, oh yeah, well, let's not talk about all this energy and everything, but we have to face the fact that whatever we're doing isn't working. People are burning out, and burning out means they're exhausted. Let's use a better word. People are exhausted. They're mentally not able to contribute to their jobs, and they feel lethargic and distant and unmotivated towards their work. So all my shifts in the book are around how to engage people, how to run companies where you're building a legacy. How do you do that? And how do you make people feel like they want to come to work in the morning? How do you take a team of intelligent people and actually use them as a resource instead of treating them as just objects to do the job, when actually you have this amazing resource? Not one human being sees the world the same. Why not tap into that?
So basically, you want to redesign how we think about performance, how we think about productivity and perks at work as well from your traditional approaches. So it's really about designing, changing the design up a little bit. And I think one of the things you mentioned is, you know, designing digital systems that honor the nervous system. I think, can you elaborate? That sounds very interesting from what you're talking about in terms of really connecting your human biology, if you will, to work, right?
That's right. So most of us, you know, taking even rest. Think of yourself when you don't have a good night's rest. So what you are like the next day at work. But emails after work, sending emails to staff after work, Slack pings and messages to staff after hours is par for the course. It happens all the time. And it's making people's days so long. They wake up in the morning and the first thing they do is they're on their phones, because they know they have to stay ahead of everything. We have to stay ahead, otherwise we're going to get behind. And or the company's going to fire me. These are the kind of motivators that people are having to do their jobs. That is not a positive motivation. And in the EU, we are finding the World Health Organization and EU legislation is coming into play to force companies to fine companies for this kind of behavior. And it's laughable. Why do we have to be fined? Why are we treating other people in this way? You know, we need to look at ourselves. Why are we driving people to absolute exhaustion? Surely there's a better way to get the best out of people. When people are rested, I have a whole section on happiness. I mean, let's face it, if you're happy in your job, if your workplace is healthy and exciting, and you're part of projects, and you're bringing your ideas to projects, and your manager wants to hear what you have to say, and you're rewarded, not because you worked until 10 o'clock at night, but you were rewarded because you took a break and left work at 5 or 6 o'clock at night instead of working late. But no, we reward people to kill themselves.
Yeah, well, it's the American way, right? I mean, I think, do you feel like America is exporting a lot of this to the rest of the world because of our own work cultures here? Or is it just like that everywhere else too?
It's a global, you know, I think something's also interesting is AI comes along and you have to do a report. You use AI to do your report and you ask it to survey all your competitors and give you all the information about what your competitors are doing and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly you've got this base for a report that would have taken you 2 weeks in 10 minutes, let's say. So now does your manager come to you and say, well, you know, you did that survey in 10 minutes, in 10 minutes, so you would have taken 2 weeks. You can take the rest of the time off. Of course not. So we're finding that people, the pace of work, not only is it happening quickly, but it's happening even faster with AI. And people can't keep up with it. They just, it's not humanly sustainable.
It's accelerating. I mean, but it's the same argument we probably had over 100 years at this point, right? When we automated agriculture, moved away from using, you know, bulls on a farm to tractors, and moving from horses to cars and airlines, and we automate things so we can free up time, but we end up never freeing up time. We fill it with more work.
Yes, but I don't, you know, people have this argument with me, but I don't agree. I don't agree with this because think of the level of intelligence that is required of you to do your job today. It's a high level of thinking.
Yes.
And it's happening all the time. You're making multiple decisions across multiple factors. You're becoming more and more specialist, so people are operating more in silos, and they're becoming absolute experts in their field. And I think the demands mentally on people, they've never had this level of demand, and certainly this never level of information being thrown at them all the time. Because if you can, in your pocket, have the same intelligence of a Nobel laureate, that changes almost your whole personality because and your ability to do your job. Because with you, you have the second brain, elevating your own brain, requiring you to think at much higher levels and demanding insights from you as a human. The whole world of work is completely being changed. And we as humans have to take responsibility for ourselves in how we manage our own lives and our time. We have to rethink our calendars. Have I built a break in? Have I taken a time to pause? Do I have sections for deep work? Or am I just reacting to every ping and everything that I'm crawling on the floor?
Yeah.
We've never had this in, and it's the results of it speak for itself.
Yeah. We live in an instant economy. You know, you expect, you press a button and you expect things to show up an hour later, and it does. You know, and I think that's part of the problem and a feature, if you will, of our current economic system, if you will.
Well, I don't think there's been a more exciting time to live in because I was born into an era where a lot of things were inherited. I've inherited management styles which I've evolved. You know, I think we've been doing leadership training for many, many years. But human literacy is now becoming the new competitive advantage. And I think the future belongs to those who are going to be able to lead that shift.
Yeah. Okay. So, last question before we wrap up here. So, if somebody listening to this wants to start tomorrow, and I'm thinking, most likely a CEO or a leader of a team, what are the first few steps that they should start off with?
I'd start really getting to know my team and finding out. Start with energy. Next time, ask your team, when do you feel at your best? When do you do your best thinking? And start redesigning meetings around your team. Start redesigning work. It's a small shift, but it sends a massive cultural signal that your team's energy matters. And this is one way that you can start a redesign. I would start with something like that.
Makes sense. Well, I appreciate your time, Penny. Thank you so much for being on this podcast, and your book, Leadership, From Leadership to Strategic Pioneering. When does the book come out, and how can people learn more about you?
The book is almost out just for a few days, so it's very exciting. It's hot off the press. And I have put it at a very discounted price for the next month because also of this podcast. And I would love people to be able to give me feedback. And I think we need to start sharing on. I'm looking for explorers, people that realize this is a messy business. We're not sure where we're going. It's a horizon out there. It's not a destination. And people who want to experiment and try different things and see how their teams are affected by these changes and how their performance goes up and how their happiness goes up and therefore productivity goes up. So I'm really excited to work with people and to hear from people. So if you buy the book and you're listening, I would like to hear from you. What are you going to try? And please share with me how it works because we're all in this together and we have to ask ourselves, what can we do differently?
Thank you, Penny. I'm definitely going to start off with this energy question with my team. So, and ask myself the same question as well every morning. Thanks again, Penny, for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Sri Chalapa here. Thank you so much for listening to the People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you are a successful leader or a people strategist who would like to be on this program, please visit engagedly.com/People Strategy Leaders Podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag People Strategy Leaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Sri Chalapa. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And thank you to Patrick Ramsey, sound engineer at Kalinga Production Studios, for recording and mixing this show.